Please note that this podcast was recorded before the COVID-19 pandemic. Welcome to the Frictionless Innkeeper podcast series. Our show is brought to you by the Frictionless Guest app, which allows innkeepers to provide guests with their recommendations of the best local places to eat, play, and shop during their stay. The Frictionless Guest app is accessible through all mobile and desktop devices, and you can learn more about it by visiting frictionlessguest.com. Once again, that's frictionlessguest.com. I'm Matt Langan, and I'll be joined by Steve Short, the founder and CEO of the Frictionless Guest app. And today we're speaking with Jim Mead, the owner and operator of Bear Mountain Lodge, Bear Meadows Lodge, and 131 Main Street, three non-traditional B&Bs in the mountains of northern Pennsylvania. He is also the author of a new book, No Cook Breakfast, which is a practical guide infused with a personal narrative about his life before, during, and after opening his B&Bs. The book also offers guest comments from his own logbook, providing insights into what makes guests truly happy. And for this episode, Jim will be providing us with insights into his non-traditional approach to running B&Bs, as well as provide more details about his book. And Jim and Steve, how are you both doing today?
It's a beautiful day. A beautiful day to be on Frictionless Podcast.
Oh, wonderful. Steve, how are you doing today?
Doing all right, Matt. Can't complain, all things considered.
That's great. Well, it's great to have both of you here today. And Jim, let's start with your background. We understand you started your career as a fisheries research biologist and then transitioned into being an innkeeper. Tell us about that.
Well, it's a long story, but just the short version is I actually started with the state of Pennsylvania for 8 years, and then I started a career with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service research, and that had to do with migrating fish populations, what they call interjurisdictional fish populations, in other words, between nations. So the Great Lakes, lake trout between the U.S. and Canada, and then Atlantic salmon along the coast and going up the rivers between and among states. So the idea was to restore populations, struggling populations. I did research there almost until I retired after 34 years in fisheries. I had the opportunity, I guess, to travel a good bit and enjoy that. But most of my time was spent in Northeast Pennsylvania, Northeast U.S., in and around Pennsylvania. I did have the opportunity to go to Norway and work with folks there on their Atlantic salmon culture programs. And I had the opportunity to be a visiting scientist in the former Soviet Union, and went from their Arctic Murmansk up in the Arctic Circle down to the Black Sea and subtropical, the Ukraine that's in the news now. So that was quite an experience with the sturgeon hatcheries and that sort of thing. My career had to do with restoring fish populations primarily through hatchery production, which is a form of factory farming. And my job was to look at the quality and quantity that you could produce with a unit flow of water. So it had to do with fish physiology and survival after release. That's what I did. I did that until I was 60 years old. Then I retired and I came back to Wellsboro, Pennsylvania, northern Pennsylvania, where my kids had grown up and gone to school. And I had a home here. And that home within a year became Bear Mountain Lodge. So that's where I am.
Tell us about Bear Mountain Lodge and your other two properties.
Yeah, Bear Mountain Lodge. I had a Northwood style home that I'd built in 1993, 94. And when I retired and came back here, the house was empty and lonely. And so I had to make a decision. And I decided I wanted to keep it. I had designed it and helped the builders, and it was close to my heart. So I wanted to keep it, and I wanted to make it live. It was in a good spot. It was in a stand of hickories with a driveway going down to the main road. It was picturesque, and it seemed to lend itself to what could be a B&B. So I pursued that, and I think within 6 months, I had converted it to a B&B. Yeah, I had a good bit of success, you might say. It started to take off within a year, certainly 2 years. Within a year, I decided I had opened just 3 rooms, and so I converted another room. So I had 4 rooms there in the lodge. And then 2 years later, my daughter had been purchasing a home in Wellsboro. She didn't live here, but she always wanted to come back. And she said, "Dad, I'm not going to be able to purchase this home. I'm going to sell it." And so I said, "Okay, I'm going to purchase it and we'll see if we can do something with it," because I had a good bit of business at the Bear Mountain Lodge B&B. So I turned that property into a 2-room bed and breakfast. And then, about 2 years after that, I had an opportunity for another lodge style property, a log home, not too far away, about 8 miles from Bear Mountain Lodge. And that would certainly lend itself to a B&B. And again, Bear Mountain Lodge was pretty full. I was turning away people, certainly on the weekends and during the season. And so I pursued that. And my son came from Baltimore and stayed a while and helped me get that one up to speed. So I ended up with 3 properties, and I put them together in a way that I wanted them to be a cut above the standard in these parts. And so I made them, I would say, upscale. Each room has a fireplace. Each room, I started out with, it's going to have a handmade bed. It's going to have a tiled bathroom. It's going to have a fireplace. And it's going to have a feature, either a private hot tub on a private deck or a whirlpool tub inside. And then I fancied it up with the accommodations inside with quilts, put a flower in the room. And when folks arrive, they're welcomed with sort of soft martini music and a rose in the fireplace. And it's a pretty good look. So that's what I have.
Awesome. Steve, I'll pass the baton over to you.
You don't have to pass. I'll take it anyway. So, you know me.
Grab it.
So, Jim, yeah, exactly. I'm not shy. So give us a little feel for timeline. I think you had said when we talked to you before that you retired in 2004. Does that sound right? And then you kind of kicked into gear pretty quickly with this in about 2005. So you've been doing it for about 15 years. Is that about right?
That's exactly right. Exactly right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And talk a little bit. I mean, it was funny when you were talking about being involved in fish hatcheries and that sort of thing. You said something about survival and release. And I thought, so you got released from the fisheries business, or, you know, your calling here. And now, was this survival or was this just something you wanted to do?
Oh, I'm sorry. I think I confused the issue there. I'm talking about the criteria with fish production.
I was making an analogy.
I got it. Okay. Yes. Well,
so, you know, when you retired, you said you were like 60 years old. You retired in 2004. Did you kind of have this vision, you know, in trying to understand, like, you know, the innkeeper thing, what drew you to it? Because I know you're more of a, when you talked about the reasons why you took this approach, it was more about the way you are, which is, hey, I like seclusion. Right. And so you're in a secluded area, you take a kind of a laid back approach, but yet you decided to become an innkeeper. And I'm just, you know, if you can go back to that time and tell us, you know, why you decided, it probably wasn't for survival. You were retired. You probably could have done what you wanted to. What led you to wanting to give this thing a shot?
I understand. And yes, I think that's important. When I retired, I bought a little motorhome, a nice little motorhome, and I started to travel around. And I had a partner, a wonderful woman who had been a flight attendant and been in hospitality all her life. And she had owned B&Bs and restaurants. And at the time, traveling around, that wasn't all it was cracked up to be. I had traveled a bit and I thought, I'm not ready for this. I need something more. And so the first thing I did was help in her B&Bs in terms of the website, the converting reservations to an electronic form. I got a pretty good feel for what was going on there. And after a pretty short time, I said, I think I need more of a life than I had anticipated. I'm never bored, but upon retirement, I was missing something, and it wasn't going to be solved through travel for me. I needed production. I needed to produce something. So I said, I think I have a home here. It's quiet and empty. It's suitable for a B&B. I have a pretty good idea how this business works. And so I told my partner and I told friends, I'm going to convert this to a B&B. And she said, I'm going to help you. And others said, yeah, we have ideas. And so pretty soon with help, that's how it came about. So I would say my first thought was, no, it had nothing to do with survival. I'm never bored and I survived just fine. On second thought, it filled a production need in my life. I wanted to be useful and productive rather than be an observer.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, it's great insight because you know, we hear when we talk with innkeepers on the podcast, we do hear different reasons, different motivations for why. And when we talk to some consultants who work with aspiring innkeepers, that's a huge part of it. So it's interesting you found this desire, this need to kind of do things. But the thing that's cool is that you decided not to do things the way probably most bed and breakfasts were doing things at the time, right? You kind of did them on your own, did things on your own terms, and the way, I guess, that maybe you modeled your target or assumed guest audience more to the way that you like things being done. Is that a fair enough assessment?
Thank you. I think you put your finger on it right there. I had stayed in B&Bs and I wasn't always comfortable. The classic of the sort of the Victorian B&B with the frou-frou sometimes, oft times, made me nervous. Coming down to breakfast at a set time and meeting folks wasn't something I was excited about doing. So I thought, I would like to do a B&B, but I'm not big on the social interaction. I want to be friendly. I want to be kind. I want to meet neat people, but I don't want to just be around to chat, and I don't want to cook breakfast. So those were two starting tenets to address. I think I started with the idea that I need to set up a way for folks to come and check in anytime without a welcome desk, without a person on duty. And how am I going to do that? And then the second thing is, how am I going to fix breakfast without cooking? And so each of those things I solved in different ways. But the big one, I think, was the breakfast. And so I say, I don't have a sit-down cooked breakfast. I have that right on the website. But I do offer breakfast in two ways. And so what I came up with was a brunch basket, I called it. And that has fresh muffins, fresh fruit, trail bars, but it comes with a stocked refrigerator with yogurt and a couple cheeses and orange juices and then Gatorade and green tea and waters. I also have a jute bag, a welcome bag. So when folks come to their room, their welcome letter is attached to a jute bag, a Bear Mountain bag, and inside is maps and literature, local literature. The welcome letter gives them more information. And then within the room, there's a directory with a lot of detailed information, and including phone numbers on all the things you might need to know. So it was set up so that the brunch would be there for them. If they wanted to leave at 6 in the morning and go for a hike, they could even put it in their jute bag and take off. If they want to sleep in until noon and they're on their honeymoon, fine. There's no time, there's no 9 to 10:30 or 7 to 9 time to come down and eat and greet. So that seemed to work for me, and I was pleasantly surprised that a lot of guests liked that. And there was one consultant here to inspect. He was here twice to inspect. And the second time, and that is for a B&B association that requires inspection. The second time, he happened to have a common friend with the person in the next room who he happened to meet, and they chatted about their friend who has a bed and breakfast in Lancaster County. And he said, you know, Jim, this is great. This is a neat place, but, you know, he doesn't cook breakfast. And she said, thank God. I don't have to put on makeup. I don't have to go to get food in the morning. I don't have to put on makeup and go meet and greet folks. And I love it. So at that point, he started to think, maybe this is an option and that people do like it. I have a lot of return guests, and often the guys say, you know, this is better. So I feel good about it. And that's the, I guess I'm an outlier when it comes to meeting and greeting and serving breakfast, but it seems to work. And folks that experience it seem to want to come back and experience it more. So thank you.
Yeah. And it seems like the area, I mean, the area is a draw, and it seems like, I don't know, maybe the personality of guests who want to go to a more secluded area and do more outdoorsy kinds of things, you know, that maybe that fits their personality. I don't know. Just like it seems to fit yours that you decided to retire in this area. You love the outdoors and you like seclusion somewhat and privacy. And it seems to all fit, and it kind of makes sense, you know?
And I believe that, again, I believe that's part of it. I'm not sure that's all of it, but I believe that's a big part of it. I do run into a guest now and then that say, oh, no cooked breakfast. Oh, what the, you don't cook breakfast. And we want, we like that experience. And I'm so happy to recommend other places in the area in town that do that. And I guess my motivation is I want everyone to be happy. It works for some people, but not all people. Just like the sit-down breakfast works wonders for some people, but makes some other people a bit nervous sometimes.
Understood.
Mm-hmm.
So now you've apparently, being productive also includes becoming an author. So you've written this book. You want to talk to us about that a little bit and what motivated you to do that and what topics you hit on in the book?
Yes, thank you. Thank you. The book, No Cooked Breakfast, it's in three parts. It's a three-part book. And the first is how I started the B&B. And it's sort of a memoir and brings out things that I ran into that I don't think you'd see in a how-to book. But it's just my experience. And it embellishes quite a bit the story that I just told you about starting up the B&B. And then the first question I often get is, you know, who is this guy? So the first part of the book is how I started the B&B and who I am. The second part of the book is, it's the guest's story. I put journals in each room, and starting when the day I opened in 2005. And I have about 25 filled journals with guests' comments about why they came, what they did, what they liked, what they didn't like, what they saw, and sometimes some heartfelt thoughts. It's surprising that why the people come. I was also surprised at how excited they were to be here. I didn't realize it. It's a great experience that people look forward to going away. This is their adventure. It's not just another day of work that I might see. It is a big deal. So the majority of this book is part two. It's based on guests' comments in the journal. So it is told in their words, literally. But it's divided up into five chapters and about 30 different subtopics as to why they're here or what they're doing here. And that is sort of a book in itself, a story in itself. And then part three of the book is the takeaways, my takeaways. So what have I learned doing this? And what might I tell an aspiring innkeeper, someone looking to get into it, what to expect? So that's sort of the three parts. And it's been a good thing for me. It was a good experience for me. And it's something that is, I guess, a promotion in terms of insight for my guests. And I think folks like that. So
tell us a little bit about, I mean, you'd already, if you talk about the kind of the three groupings of topics in the book, you already hit on the how you got started and your background and all of that. Talk a little bit about maybe anything interesting that came out of the guest feedback experience, you know, that you talk about in kind of the second chunk. Let's talk about that a little bit. Then we can also get into the advice next. So with anything interesting, you talk a little bit about your surprise, I guess, at how basically delighted guests were, that how big of a deal it was for them to get away. Anything else, whether it's kind of amusing stories or just anything else that kind of sticks out in your mind?
There have been a lot. And I guess the part about how important it is to guess. I've discovered that sort of the number one clientele are folks coming for anniversaries, middle-aged and older folks. But folks will come here for a romantic getaway, and they may get engaged, or they may be here for a honeymoon, or they may be here for a recent anniversary or a long-term anniversary. But the romance part of it is huge. Folks like to get away and have that fireplace and that hot tub and maybe chocolate-covered strawberries and some champagne. And this is a destination, it turns out. I'm waiting for them to go to the canyon, and they don't go. They just are here. So I think the idea of the destination, of the importance of this getaway, I undervalued. I've met folks from just all over the place, and I'm surprised that I need to learn the lesson my father kept telling me. You can't tell a book by its cover. And I'm so surprised that the personalities don't always fit what I thought was such good insight about folks' personalities and who they are. And I've just met many wonderful guests. I've had folks that have come here, and along the line, something has happened. They've lost a mate. And had one woman come back for 16 times visiting the place that she and her husband loved. And she wrote such heartfelt things in the journal. So I guess it's more serious to me than humorous in this case, that folks just, it has meaning. It has heartfelt meaning. There are, and sticking with the romance for just a moment, there are the humorous parts of that where guys are surprised that they didn't know that this was really their wife. And they say something like that. This is a romantic place, and sometimes it's a chuckle about that. That's the one topic that is a driver here, coming here for anniversaries and getaways. Another is bicyclists, that is mountain bikes and folks riding the rail trail. And for me, that's a big draw. So I have a bike barn at each place for folks that bring their bikes to store them. And they can get on the rail trail and have experience there. And then they write about the wildlife that they've seen, whether it be a bear or an eagle or a rattlesnake or whatever. So that's a big deal. And I guess I think that about sums it up. There are so many routine. The non-routine would have to do with surprises. An older couple, and they're having trouble, and they call, and we don't have a lot of direct interaction, but if someone needs something, we're right there. And I'll go to the room and find a couple that are, well, the man turned out to be 80, and the wife was just right around 70. But she couldn't work the air conditioner because the remote wasn't in the line of sight. She wasn't pointing it at the air conditioner to change it. And so I said, oh, I do this all the time. Yeah, you got to point the silly thing. And that fixed that. And she was embarrassed, but not embarrassed. It was all okay. And introduced me to her husband, who had a strong Italian accent. And I asked about Italy and told him I had been there. And he said, why? And I said, skiing. And he said, where? And I said, Cervinia. And he said, oh my goodness. And then he got so excited. And he was a young man all of a sudden. And he was excited and telling me about his skiing adventures. And it was just energizing and a great experience. So this person that didn't seem to get out of his chair all of a sudden was filled with life, and his eyes were sparkling. He was an MD, and he said he still practiced. And I thought, how can this be? Okay, those are the stories.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, you talk about not interacting much with your guests, and yet there are times when you do, and you seem to get a lot out of that. So, and I think that's part of what you were saying, maybe, is that when it's more, you know, true interaction as opposed to socially, you know, when you're actually talking about something significant as opposed to just saying, hey, how are you doing? Then it sounds like that's a lot more meaningful for you. Meaningful interaction as opposed to just kind of surface interaction with people.
So, yes. Yeah. Hanging out for small talk is not my thing, but such interesting folks come through. And when you discover that, and or they discover you, it makes it worthwhile, it makes it something special.
Yeah, that's cool. So now what are, you talk about takeaways and advice and that sort of thing at the last section of the book. Can you give us some of your insights, some of your tips, ideas, thoughts, or whatever, for, you know, other innkeepers, aspiring innkeepers, that sort of thing?
Yes, I would say that I discovered I had a lot of surprises, but I just, let me throw out there what my thought would be if for an aspiring innkeeper, to answer your question. The idea of following your own personality and following your passion, which may sound like a cliche, but if you like nature and wildlife, that's great. I can see that. That worked for me. I'm surprised how many people come here, and I didn't think that might be their gig, yet they love it and they get into it and they have questions. And by providing this, I find that it's a niche market, but it's more than that. So I think if whatever it is, if you follow your passion and do what you enjoy, other people appreciate that, and you'll find a lot that do identify with it, and I believe you will grow a business. So that was mine, but I think that there's a lot of topics. The next thing I would tell a beginning innkeeper is don't try to do everything. You can be a tour guide, and you can be a chef, and you can be the ultimate host. You can have special evenings and whatever, cocktail night or play the piano night. You can do a lot of things, but are you going to do them well? And so I would say, don't try to do everything, but whatever you do, do it well. Think excellence. And so I don't do breakfast, but folks seem to be pretty happy with all that we give them. And in addition to what we give them for breakfast, I give them town dollars. I go to the Chamber of Commerce and I buy dollars from them. And I tell them we're giving them Wellsboro bucks, and here's a list of all the places they can use those. So if they want a fried egg in the morning, they can go to the famous Wellsboro Diner, or they can go to the Native Bagel, or they can go to other restaurants in Wellsboro, or they can go to shops and spend those dollars. And the merchants love it. The guests love it. Gives them a good excuse to get down there. We have to go spend these dollars. So that's good. Don't cut the corners. And so I don't do breakfast, but I do breakfast, and folks seem to be pretty happy with it. Those that want to socialize with a sit-down cooked breakfast may need to go somewhere else, but most of my guests seem to be pretty happy with that. So those are the things off the top of my head in terms of suggestions to the...
Great.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. That's good. And it sounds to me like, so I kind of boil it down to do what you feel comfortable doing, and... But don't be afraid to take some chances. I mean, don't think that everybody, you know, has a certain cookie cutter, like the cookie cutter approach or the more standard approach to what people perceive as a bed and breakfast, that you don't necessarily have to do what everybody else is doing. You can, you know, do what you're passionate about. And at the same time, you might, taking a little different approach, you might find more of a niche. It differentiates yourself from the rest of the more cookie cutter places. And what I'm hearing is you might actually be surprised, because you find people coming out of the woodwork that actually want this, that maybe it was never offered before. And now they've got a choice, and you're suddenly surprised that so many people are actually into what you're into and what you're offering.
Yes. Yes. I think you put your finger on that. The idea that don't try to be like the others. Don't think there's, as you said, cookie cutter. Don't think there's a way you have to do it. Do it in a way that would make you feel good, and you may be surprised. Yeah, I would think so. When I said that, I don't like the small talk, but kindness and a warm welcome is so important. So when people arrive and open their door, they have to feel, I'm being welcomed into this room, even if I'm not there. When folks call for a reservation, I think that is a key, because the person that answers my phone does wonderful service, you might say, guest service. She will get excited immediately about whatever the reason is for this potential guest visit. And she's sincere. She's absolutely sincere. The person that answers the phone here is a local woman who loves to serve. And when you tell her, oh, you want to come to do whatever, she gets excited. Oh, my goodness, you'll love that. You know what you could do? And she starts. And pretty soon, the folks are making the reservation. I mean, just like that. So it didn't take me long once I had this person on board to say, I'm not ever answering the phone again because here come the reservations. You know, and but it has to do with friendliness, kindness, and making the person feel comfortable, I believe.
Right. There's different ways of doing that. And some people are better at certain aspects than others. And if that's not your thing, and you find somebody who's been better, then you go with that, it sounds like. So, yeah, cool. All right. Well, we've got three questions that whenever we're talking to innkeepers, we've been doing this last several podcasts with innkeepers anyway. Since the Frictionless Guest app is all about guest experience, this is kind of our way of getting some perspective and kind of an informal survey, I guess you'd say, for us to learn a little bit more about guest experience and get your take, get an innkeeper's take on this, and also have that help out with other innkeepers listening. So first question we ask here is, how do you define guest experience? How important is it to your bed and breakfast? And what strategies or tactics do you use to address it and improve it?
Yes. Take the second part of that first, and that is, it's extremely important. It's extremely important. I think it may be not as easy to define exactly what it is, the guest experience, but my objective is, our job is to make the guest happy. The guest comes here wanting to be happy, I believe, but they need to know, they need to feel like they're being taken care of. So we provide an environment and the wherewithal that they can do the things they want to do and they can relax and they can enjoy the trip. But we need to know that they're happy and content here. And I think that's what makes the stay. They have to feel that in their heart. So how do I know that? And that is guest feedback. And so I have what has turned out to be two real good mechanisms. And one of the first questions is, oh, did they write in the guest book? Did they write in the journal? And many of the happiest guests want to write in the journal. So we see what they like. If they didn't write in the journal, are they happy? I don't know. But whether they wrote in the journal or not, I follow up with an email asking the guests, thanking them for their stay and for allowing us to host them and asking what we could do to make their next stay better. And most times we get a response and it's so positive and they say they can't think of everything or anything. Every once in a while, we do get a rare sort of criticism. Well, I wish we would have had whatever, or you could do this or that. Whatever they say, if there's any question or if they allude to a criticism, I get right back to them and I address that and I tell them what I'm doing about it. So those two things. I think the guest experience is they want to have an experience. They're looking forward to something special. So this needs to be special. In this case, it's being in touch with nature. It's having an upscale room and it's having a lot of privacy for their private deck and their private hot tub and all their needs met, but no one's going to bother them. And they're going to have their own room and their own area. And we've had guests, geez, we were there all weekend and we know there were other guests, but we didn't see anyone or we saw very few people and it was like it was our own place. So the guest experience is something that they see that they don't get at home or in the chain hotels or motels, and something special. And we give them an opportunity to experience something different. And then their experience has to make them feel comfortable, content, happy. And we have a way, I think I have a way of getting some feedback on that, and I act on it.
Okay, excellent. Good deal. Number two, if you could get an hour of time with a leading expert consultant in the B&B industry, what are the two or three most important questions you would like to ask them?
And Steve, that's a tough one for me. I may have to punt on that without making it a joke. I mean, I've observed, and I think if I had to ask, it would be something about analytics and measuring the effect of the stay and how do you quantify the guest experience. And that's a tough one, so I wouldn't know how to answer that. But that might be what I would ask.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought. And you're a science guy, so that I guess that doesn't really surprise me that you're looking for the analytical approach. But that's kind of cool. Okay, and number three, what is the percentage mix of guests that stay at your bed and breakfast? Talked a little bit about this anecdotally, and base that upon three age groups, and also talk about how you see that trending, if at all. The three age groups are under 40, 40 to 60, and over 60. So what's the percentage mix of those groups right now, and how are they trending?
Okay, I want to preface this with one thought, and that is, if you open my website, you see forest and you see a canyon, and you see the words, a getaway for grownups. I have tried to do what I could to not encourage the party-hardy crowd, the younger folks. And my target is older anniversary couples. So I've biased this a bit. Having said that, I would say, if I had to come up with a number, I would say 20% under 40. And then 60 is about my target. And we do get a lot of folks around that age. But I would say 40% of 40 to 60 and 40% mm-hmm. over 60. The trend in Bear Lodges, I believe, is toward the older. And it's because I cater to the older crowd and don't encourage the younger crowd.
Are you saying that over the 15 years, the trends, and more recently, really, you actually see even more older folks? Or are you just saying that it's pretty much always been this mix of the 20, 40, and 40?
No, I'd say 15 years ago, there would be more of the under 40 folks, for sure.
Okay. And I wonder, part of that because people returning? Is that why they're getting, they're 15 years older?
Oh, I see.
And
yeah, part of that. But I believe there's something bigger. And that is, I learned very quickly that I was getting party people or young folks. They wanted to party hard. And so I very quickly tried to discourage that with little notes, quiet hours in the book. We have quiet hours from 10 p.m. to 8 a.m. And turning away and folks coming here for, they want to have a bridal party. No, 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 no. No events and no young folk parties. It's for registered mm-hmm. guests only and enforcing that part. So I think there is something, but when we have older folks that are kind and they're just, they want to give you a hug and they thank you so much for this experience and they love it and it's quiet and it's nature. And I don't want to spoil that with young folks. So I'm not interested in the great American sportsman, even though I was in fisheries forever and have experience in the woods and hunting and fishing. There are too many that are, I don't market to the great Americans. I love the sporting ethic and folks that do this as a family tradition, but I think you have to be careful about folks coming in and filling up the bathtub with ice and putting the beer in there and getting out the fishing rods and the guns and saying, hey, let's go get them. I'm not interested in that. Yeah. So I have pushed it one way.
Okay, good deal.
Yeah.
All right, Matt, is it that time for you to kind of reel it in here using your fishing analogy?
I think it is. Yeah, and this has been a great podcast and a wonderful discussion between both of you. And Jim, we always ask here at the end, before I do my little outro, is there anything else to add or anything we may have missed?
Well, I think that we covered it so well, and I so appreciate you putting up with me going from left field to right field and wherever. And I thank you so much for having me. And this was a great experience. So,
absolutely.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you, Matt.
We really appreciate it, Jim. Yeah, we thank you, Jim. We really appreciate it. And good luck with the bed and breakfast and the book and anything else that you do. It was great talking with you.
It was great talking with you. Thank you so much. And all the best to you.
All right, Matt, lead us out.
All right, here we go. Our guest for this episode of the Frictionless Innkeeper podcast was Jim Mead, the owner and operator of Bear Mountain Lodge, Bear Meadows Lodge, and 131 Main Street, three non-traditional B&Bs in the mountains of northern Pennsylvania. As you heard, he's also the author of a new book called No Cook Breakfast, which is a practical guide infused with a personal narrative about his life before, during, and after opening his B&Bs. And as you heard, Jim was kind enough to share his insights into his non-traditional approach to being an innkeeper, as well as offered more insights into what he covered into his book. And we really hope you enjoyed this episode of the Frictionless Innkeeper podcast, brought to you by the Frictionless Guest app. If you wish to learn more, please visit frictionlessguest.com. Once again, that's frictionlessguest.com. And Jim and Steve, thanks again for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.